Das ist Lantania.
That's Lantania.
All right, today we're going to talk about the need to make an honest reckoning. And, you know, I'm going to reiterate something I spoke about last week. In some way, the Tanya that we're learning now, this wasn't exactly written for us. But of course it was. But on a simple level, it wasn't. Why? Because remember that the Alter Rebbe does not address the lowest common denominator. He's not addressing people who violate the will of Hashem at will on a regular basis, like most of us. He's talking about Beinonim, or at least the aspiring Beinoni. That means that the person that's being talked about in these pages is quite possibly an individual who never sins. Not only he never sins, he never would sin. Like, think of something abhorrent to you, which is prohibited by the Torah, maybe murder. I firmly believe that nobody around this table has ever killed anybody. I firmly believe that nobody around this table will ever kill anybody. Like, I refuse to believe that anybody around this table will ever kill anybody. Okay, does that make us a tzaddik? No. It's an example of what a Beinoni is like. So for a Beinoni, anything which is against the code of Jewish law is like killing somebody. Meaning, it's not like killing somebody, obviously. But what I mean to say is, just as you would never do that, so too, the Beinoni would never do all of the Avedas. I don't know if anybody around the table has eaten pork before. It's not my business. I think with fair certainty, nobody around the table would ever eat pork. And if they did, they regretted doing it. They would never do it again. Now, just because they'll never eat bacon and eggs again, or ever, doesn't make them a tzaddik. It means in this area, this will be a paradigm of how a yid could be a tzaddik. The Rebbe actually talks about this, and he says that in some ways, every single yid has tzaddik beinoni in Russia, that we have certain things which actually we find repulsive. It's quite possible that you find bacon and eggs repulsive, that if somebody would put a plate of it in front of you, not only would you not be interested in eating it, but you wouldn't eat it, but you would in fact be horrified, because it's been instilled in you, maybe from such a young age, that this is the anathema, the polar opposite of what it means to be a Jew, that you would just never consider doing this. You wouldn't do it. Out of the question. And maybe even find it horrifying or repulsive. Well, that's how a tzaddik finds anything which is outside of serving Hashem. And if it's not something that horrifies you or repulses you, but something you just wouldn't do, it's not even a question, there's no contest, it's not like Yetzirah comes at you and throws all kinds of temptation and you're fighting it off and parrying it and say, oh, I'm not going to do it. You wouldn't even do it. It doesn't come into the conversation at all. That's how Beinoni lives his life. And then, of course, there's the Rasha, which most of us, unfortunately, can identify with very easily, where there are things which you desire, and every once in a while, you cave in, you did it. Don't tell anybody. Yeah, my neighbor does it more. And anyway, if he was me, he would do it 10 times worse than me, so it's not even so bad. And we convince ourselves that we're actually quite fine, nice and shiny in front of Hashem anyway. And if you're in that kind of state, you might end up having some spiritual EDD. And even if you're a Beinoni, which means you're a person who never did any Avedas and is not going to do any Avedas, you might still end up in a state of spiritual EDD. It's just what happens. That's the way Hashem built us. We could end up in this state where the normative stimuli, spiritual stimuli, it's not working. It's not getting through to us. Very frustrating. Beinoni's upset. How come I'm learning Chassidus and it's not moving me? I'm listening to the shofar, it's not inspiring me. I just feel like almost like my nerve endings are dead. And the answer the Alter Rebbe gives is that you have this block of wood, that the light of Yiddishkeit, it's not catching. What you need to do is just like the block of wood would have to be pulverized. Mevachonly, you got to take yourself and you got to beat yourself down a little bit, and then the light of the neshama will be able to come forth. And how do you do that? And Alter Rebbe said, well, you have to be honest, brutally honest with yourself, and make a real reckoning. And we talked about the reckoning previously. First, we talked about the idea of what you were capable of doing, the fact that things like that are polar opposite of what Hashem wants are something you might entertain, and that in and of itself should be sobering for you. Then the Alter Rebbe talked about things that you actually did. So it's not just what I'm potentially capable of, but things I actually did. It was troubleshooting there. And now the Alter Rebbe is going to talk about a person who doesn't have those little avedas. So that's why I said it's not talking about us. A person doesn't have any avedas. They never did anything wrong. He actually is, so to speak, on guard at all times, fights off every attack by the Yetzirah, repulses every lust, craving, and desire his animal soul throws at him, and never does anything wrong. So, I don't know, I can't identify with that. I couldn't have these problems. But the Alter Rebbe has to speak to him too. To this man or woman who is so perfectly in tune with the will of Hashem, the Alter Rebbe has to speak to them also. We can kind of be spectators and listen in. And, you know, maybe it's inspiring to see if even that person has to sober up, even that person has to become a little more contrite, a little more humble because of, like, some kind of nuanced, very refined level of imperfection. So for us, Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so that we have much to be contrite about and not to be so high and mighty. And in doing a little kind of honest, brutal reckoning, really being honest with ourselves and doing real soul accounting, will come to crush the spirit of indifference. And as such, the light of the neshama will be able to glow and to take root and shine. So the Alter Rebbe says, talking about Mori de Chushbina, we're talking about making this honest reckoning. And if you remember last week, I shared with you the story of the villager who couldn't read. Remember, couldn't read Hebrew? And he got a letter. He took it to the school teacher. School teacher read the letter. And the villager fainted. He said, what happened over here? The child didn't understand. The villager, he fainted, but he couldn't even read the letter. The teacher, he read the letter perfectly. With perfect diction, every word enunciated, and he didn't faint. And the villager explained to his son, he said, silly boy, it's about my father, that letter. The letter had information about his father's demise, not the teacher's father's demise. So when you make a cheshbon, it has to be a cheshbon not about somebody else, not a theoretical cheshbon, but a cheshbon which is marid chushbina. This is the kind of thing we're supposed to be doing in the month of Elul. So v'gam mishu noki mechata sunu machamurin. Even somebody who doesn't have the sins of youth. The sins of youth are very common. The hormones set in. They're raging. Kids do things, foolish things. They're just kids. You're going to blame kids for being kids. All kids are kids. That's how it is. And depending on the society they live in, and depending on how libertine and open and permissive and promiscuous the society is, that's usually how far kids will fall. And unfortunately, our society is very permissive, very promiscuous, and kids do fall in a terrible way. So this is a person who never fell, never did anything wrong, has no chatas nurim, doesn't deal with any of that. So how is he supposed to find these sobering moments that are going to crush the big block of wood or the enamel that surrounds his heart and his soul so that the light of the neshama should be able to resonate? What's he going to think about? This is a person who really has things together. Says the Alter Rebbe, Yosim Elibei, then that person should take to heart Lekayim, to fulfill Maimer HaZeir HaKodesh, to fulfill the Maimer, the statement of the Holy Book of Zohar, that the Zohar says in the third section, page 178, that a person has to become one of those individuals who experiences a full soul accounting, an honest reckoning. And the honest reckoning is the Hainu La'aseis Cheshbenim Nafshei, to make this reckoning with his soul. Mikola Machashoves Vadiburim Vamaisim, from all of the thoughts, from every communication, and everything that was done, Shacholfu mi avru miyem heyese adayem azeh, everything you've ever said, everything you've ever thought, everything you've ever done. That's a lot of things. Im hayukula mitzad hakdusha. So, be honest. Make that reckoning. Has all of your activities always been from the side of kedusha, or mitzad hatumah rachmanu litzlan? Was it as a result of your relationship with God, or did it come from the other side? So we have this idea of the other side, and the other side doesn't have red skin, horns, and a pitchfork. The other side is simply not the side of kedusha. And the truth is that we do necessarily have one of two choices. As we read in the parsha a few weeks ago, Anochi Noisin Lefnechem, Hashem gives us two paths. Es HaChayim V'Satov, He gives us life and goodness. Es HaMavas V'Sara, death and evil. There isn't three paths. There isn't a good path, like really good, a bad path, really bad, and then a path which is somewhere in the middle. Knock yourself out, you know, whatever. It's not so holy, it's not so nice. It's what we call parav. It's not milchik, it's not fleshik, it's not, you know, it's not either extreme. It's okay, it's just, it's kind of like being in on a neutral. So you're not in overdrive, you're not in park, you're on neutral. No, that doesn't work like that, my dear friends. The truth is that we are, in every moment of life, we only have one answer. It's either I'm with God or I'm against Him. As Yeshua said to the swordsman when he met him, he said, "Halanu im l'tzareinu." Are you with us or against us?
So he's no neutral.
There really is no neutral, my friend. There really is no neutral. That's one of the most surprising things people discover when they learn Tanya. There really is no neutral. Now that means to say that everything in life can and therefore should be hallowed and sanctified. That's the meaning of b'chol drachecha de'eyu. In all of your ways, you know Him. So if you're knowing Him, then that is on the side of Kedusha. Kol ma'asecha, all of your activities, including personal grooming, and including eating, and including whatever conversation, and even your holiday or vacation, kol ma'asecha, you should always be l'shem shamayim. It should be for the sake of heaven. So if everything in life is for the sake of heaven, and nothing is done in a selfish way, but rather in a meaningful way, and even sometimes in a selfless way, so then in that case, you're serving Hashem each and every moment.
How is the grooming?
How is grooming?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you groom? You're trying to impress somebody to accomplish something which is less than good, or a yid has to look menschlich, and there's a responsibility that we have to be a mamleches kohen and v'goy kodesh, that we should be Hashem's holy nation. We should look put together, we should look a mensch, and that's why a yid does it. Is that so hard to understand? Ask a yid, why is he doing it? He's doing it for a holy purpose. There's a beautiful story that the Friedrich Rebbe, when he was a little boy, he had this this discussion of what's the difference between the life that his parents were trying to lead him in and the life of the peasants that were in the village. Lubavitch was a village. So his father told him to go and ask the kutcher, the wagon driver. Ask him what he lives for. Ask him what's his life about. So he said, he works to make money. And what is he going to do with the money? And this is like a whole progression in the conversation, but in the end, the result was to get drunk on the weekends. That was the end result. Mm-hmm. Have money to go to the tavern and get drunk. And then I'm happy. Okay, it's a certain culture, civilization. He's talking white Russia. You know, that's the currency of the times. It doesn't work for everywhere. Maybe in Canada it's beer. Maybe it's not alcohol. Maybe it's marijuana today. I don't know. But the point is to afford some kind of stimulant that can make you happy. And then I'm happy. And then the cycle begins again. then I start all over again, trying to get to my little personal nirvana, my release of happiness. And he went to this very, very simple villager, a Jewish fellow. And he started to press him. Why do you work? Why do you this? Why do you that? And the guy, in full simplicity and sincerity, in the end, all he said was, so I should be able to say Shema Yisrael. So that was, everything was leading in that direction. So I should be able to daven, say Shema Yisrael and daven. And the Rebbe Rashab told his son, a future Rebbe, this is, now you know the difference. So the question is, what is the ultimate goal? What is the purpose? What are we doing this for? And truth be told, if we were mindful, just live mindfully, thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thinking about the Eibishter, thinking about things like that, we probably would avoid a lot of the fights we get into. We would avoid a lot of the issues we have, whether it's spousal arguments or arguments amongst friends or politics, because they're all motivated by ego. You said this or you said that, or you stepped on my toe. If my toes are not so important, if it's not about me, but it's about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then I can stop and think, I said, is it really worth it? Should I make an issue out of this? What's to be gained? What is the goal? What am I looking for? You always have to ask yourself that question. Does this feed into my long-term goal? If your long-term goal is to get to a certain destination, then a wise person will say, it's not worth sweating the small stuff. Why not? But this is wrong. I'm so right or wrong always. There's a bigger goal, that's why. You be penny wise and pound foolish. So a lot of the things in life we get obsessed about are being penny wise. And they're pound foolish. It doesn't lead. The thing is, if the goal in life is to accomplish self-gratification and sensual libido, those little niggling moments, they do get in the way of sensual libido and self-gratification. So therefore, people do get upset about it. But if you have a bigger perspective on life, why bother? Really, who cares? Does the Eibishter care? Does God? Does it fit into God's plan? Yes or no? I was once present. And there was an older Hasidic Yid. And this is, okay, going back almost 20 years. And somebody said something to him about the internet, if he knows about the internet. So he said, not really. So they said, but you don't know about the internet, you know, okay. This is like in 2002, 2003. He said, is it going to give me avav yira? Is it going to give me more reverence for Hashem? Is it give me more passion for Hashem? So the person is having the conversation with him, says, I don't know. He says, what am I interested for? What does it do for me? It was like, it's a conversation, what does it do for me? If it gives me avav yira, the answer is yes. If it doesn't give me avav yira, the answer is no. Now, mind you, that's fine when you're 90 years old. A 90-year-old chassidish yid could say that. But the truth is that a young person who has the opportunity and the responsibility to reach out to the world, and he says, well, I don't want to know from no internet. Vera, get it from Facebook. Doing such things. He's actually shirking his duty. Because this is a medium that people are connecting with today. And your job, the Rebbe gave us a job and a mission and a purpose, not just to be connecting to ourselves, on Avav Yira, but to worry about everybody else's Avav Yira. So the question is, does the internet contribute to Avav Yira? Oh, it certainly does. Is Facebook a medium through which Yiddishkeit can be promulgated? You better believe it. Well, then we should be on it. Does taking pictures of my lunch and posting it on Facebook, does that add to Avav Yira? I don't think so. So I don't do it. So that means to live a meaningful life. Does that make sense? So in everything, you have to ask yourself, what does the Eibishter want me to do now? Am I supposed to be involved with this or not? Does it contribute in some way, to the grander picture, to the fulfillment of the greater vision? And the answer is ultimately, if we're honest, and most of the times we aren't, but if we're honest with ourselves, the answer is always going to come down to yes or no. You don't like that?
No question.
Yeah.
Well, let's say simple choices, you know, go left or right, what to dress, you know, those are neutral choices.
There are neutral choices, like go left or right, that have actually nothing to do with Bechira Chavshas. We don't get freedom of choice for that.
What to dress?
Yeah, I don't think you have the freedom of choice for that.
You don't have freedom of choice?
Nah. It's predictable.
Okay, so...
That's the famous ideas predestined reality. All these things are predictable. The choices you make, why you chose that shirt today, is probably, there's like 50 things or direct causes of why you chose that shirt today, and it's probably predictable. If somebody have enough information about you, and know everything about who you are and what happened to you and the choices you make, you'll be able to predict this also. It's called predeterminism. Was it Darwin who spoke about that?
So it's not choice.
Freedom of choice is limited for ideas of Torah and mitzvahs. If it's connected to Avedas Hashem, to serving God, you have freedom of choice. Bechira Chavshas is a gift, and in some ways doesn't make sense. The idea of freedom of choice and God knowing everything is somewhat contradictory. So it only is given to us, only for when it's part of Avedas Hashem. If it's part of serving Hashem, we'll have that choice. And that choice in and of itself is an act of Avedas Hashem, serving Hashem. So this is the cheshbon you have to make. That a person has to think about all the thoughts. Thoughts mean not visceral reactions or thoughts that just come to mind. Thoughts that you engage in. And the burim. And things you said. People say, how many things people say? And the actions, which were not done for a sacred and missionful purpose. Was not done to fulfill the will of Hashem. It was not done l'avedase. How many people learned early on how to just keep the trap shut? Think before they speak. How much trouble would we avoid if we actually think before we spoke, instead of just speaking and then thinking? How much trouble? Think about it in life. How many foolish things, how many dumb things have happened because people just blurt things out and say foolish things, or think that they have to fill every moment of empty space with some kind of sound. That's why people say, even when they speak publicly. Which is actually ridiculous. Why are you saying Who gets inspired? Who gets moved or educated by
Yoga.
Yoga? I don't know what that is. The answer is nobody. So why do you do it? People do it because they're not comfortable in their own skin, because they think that they have to fill every single moment of empty space with a sound, or they won't sound intelligent. So because of their insecurity, and because they need to project that, oh, I have what to say, I can fill the space. In case Chas V'Shalom, there's a quiet moment, they go, just to fill the space. I'm not saying that's Avedas Hashem or not. The it's just, It's just nature and not having trained oneself. The point I am trying to make is that if a person trains themselves to say things in a purposeful way, to actually think before they speak, which is what the Mishnah tells us. The Mishnah says that a person, siyag l'chachma shtika, a person who is wise, the key to wisdom is not always speaking. And the Gemara, the Talmud Yerushalmi says, mila b'sela, shtika b'trei. If a word is worth a buck, silence is worth two. And then, of course, somebody took that and developed it into silence is golden. I don't know why silence is golden. Maybe it's platinum. That's just a euphemism. It doesn't actually make sense. But mila b'sela shtika b'trei is a very powerful statement, because there's value to words and oftentimes more value to silence. There was once a Rav from Eretz Yisrael at one of the Farbrengens, and the Rebbe asked him to say a few words about Shleimus Haaretz, about the importance of keeping Eretz Yisrael intact and not following this terrible path of folly, where we think that giving away Chas V'Shalom pieces of Eretz Yisrael is going to lead to peace and security, which it never did. And people still repeat the same foolish mantra. So the Rebbe asked him to say a few words, and he was aware that maybe it's not his place. So he said to the Rebbe, mila b'sela, shtika b'trei. If a word has worth, has value, silence is more valuable. So the Rebbe responded to him and he said, mikenor shvaigen emol. The Rebbe said, you can only be silent once. That's only $2. But you could say many, many words. And many, many words will have the value of much more than one moment of silence. So you cannot go through life saying, okay, since mila b'sela shtika b'trei, since there's value to speaking one word and there's greater value to being silent, I'm not going to say anything. So you never say anything. You're always silent. That's not the point. The point is that you don't always have to say something. There doesn't always have to be a retort. There doesn't always have to be a comment. You have to say things. Whatever, it is what it is. Like, sometimes silence or contemplation is a healthy thing. And what you do say should be said with a purpose. Like play chess. So if I say this, what will they say? And what will the reaction be? Why bother? Is it worth it? Is it worth criticizing somebody? Is it worth making that negative comment? Is it worth putting somebody down? So this is the question that one should ask himself. And this is the meaning of an honest reckoning. And this is the meaning of the machshavas, the dibudim, and the maisim, ashalei l'Hashem heima. Shezehu pirush loshon sitra achra. This is the meaning of what we already discussed at length of the other side. In Star Wars language, the dark side. This is Darth Vader. This is the other side. Why go there? It's not what Hashem wants. So this is the kind of cheshbon, of soul reckoning, of soul accounting, that a person should have to make. And even though he won't find any terrible skeletons in his closet and didn't do any horrible sins, but the reality was that if he goes through the vast overwhelming majority of time, he'll discover that the time that Hashem gave him has largely been filled with moments that were not directed towards a purpose of Avodas Hashem. If they weren't directed towards Avodas Hashem, where were those moments? On the other side. That's not a good thing. Now the Rebbe says, you should know, Medazes, ki chol eis sha'adam mechashev machshavas kedoshes, that as long as a person is thinking holy thoughts, nase merkava be'eis zu lehecholeis hakdusha, then he becomes a vehicle, an extension or an envelope at those times for a hechol, I guess we'll translate it as a portal, of kedusha. Shebehem mushpois machashavas halalu. So basically there's something called hechalot. Specifically in Sifrei Kabbalah, it talks about seven hechalot. A hechal is like a sanctuary, a hall, an antechamber. It's like different places you could find yourself. And what are the seven hechalot? Each hechal, each hall, has its own operating system, its own currency, its own definition. There's a hechal of chesed. A person could be in a head or heart space of kindness. They could be generous. They could be in a giving mood. in a giving mode. A person could be in a hechel of gvura, which means very restrictive and demanding, self-demanding. And even sometimes harsh, judicious, making tough choices, zeroing in and focusing on what you want and being able to ignore that which gets in the way. That's the hechel of gvura. There's the hechel of teferis and so on and so forth. And just like there are seven hechalot of holiness, there are also seven hechalot of the other side, where chesed is chesed of klipa, where gvura is gvura of klipa. So when you choose a certain way of thinking, speaking, or acting, you find yourself in that headspace. That's the reality you're in for that moment. And when you're in that reality, when you're in that mode, everything is colored by that prism. I don't know, maybe it's like today you can take a picture and you can look at it through various different ways. You can see it in sepia, see it in black and white, you can see it in color, you can see it in summer, see it in winter. Same picture, right? But each one makes slightly different coloring. It looks a little different, it has a different mood, it conveys a different truth, if you will, a different perception. So that's who we are. We can choose to be in whichever color, whichever frame, whichever reality. We get to choose that reality. That's the reality we choose. And the reality, when somebody is in a certain place, he's influenced by that place. You're influenced by the people around you. You're influenced by the atmosphere you're in. We're influenced. It makes a difference to us. So when we create this proverbial atmosphere, where is your head now? How are you functioning? I'm very competitive now. I'm competitive. I know I have to achieve this. I'm gonna see what everybody else is doing. I'm gonna work twice as hard. I'm gonna be inspired by other people's efforts. That's netzach. That's called being in hechel on netzach. And sometimes people are feeling competitive, you know, when they're on. And then there's signs that people are feeling they don't want to be bothered anymore. They don't care about this. I don't care what anybody else is doing. I want to stay focused. I'm gonna try to tune everybody and everything out. Now I'm in the hechel of hoid. That's what hoid means. Hoid means that's the splendor of being able to just zero in, focus, do what I have to do. Netzach, incidentally, comes from chesed, which is outgoing and engaging. Hoid comes from gvura, which is introverted and inward focused. But in each of these situations, I'm in that zone. And that zone is the place I can choose to be. You know, people get sometimes psyched up. Okay, now I'm going to do this. That's the zone I'm going to be in. I'm not going to let anybody get to me. People are going to say not nice things. People are going to make funny comments, snide comments. I know this is, but this is the zone I'm choosing to be in. I'm going to be in a happy zone. I'm going to be generous. I'm going to be giving. I'm going to be gregarious. I'm going to be out. That's where I'm going to be. I won't stop smiling for the next 2 hours. That's the zone I'm in. And you're in a zone. And you know, sometimes people say, when I'm in my zone, that's it. Nothing can stop me. I'm in my zone. And then what happens? How do you switch? You do it actually mindlessly, almost. You do it actually almost intuitively. It's like the difference between driving shift and automatic. The gears shift. But when you're down, when you're not purposeful, then you sometimes get put into a zone where you didn't want to be. So for example, when you know there's a challenging situation and you put yourself in a certain zone, I'm not going to let it get to me, but then somebody does get to you. And then they put you in an angry zone. And in a zone of anger, in a zone of frustration, you lash out and you say and think and maybe do things that you didn't really want to think about. You didn't want to be in that zone. You didn't want to speak like that. You didn't want to do those things, but they got through to you. They blindsided you. Everybody knows this. It happens all the time. We put ourselves in a zone and somebody knocks us off kilter. So if you're really good, you quickly realize, you say, oh, I'm going to put myself right back. And sometimes we don't think about it. We're just in a zone. Sometimes people are in moods because they're just in a mood. But in every moment in life, we're in a certain zone. That's called, in the language of Kabbalah, a hechel.
Are we not in control of that zone?
Are we not in control of the zone? We can be in control of which zone we choose to be in, but sometimes when you're in a zone, the zone can control you. Like an angry zone. The problem with anger is that you lose control. And when you're angry and you're frustrated and irritable, you're not, people will say, I'm not myself. I didn't want to say those things. I didn't want to do those things. Of course, ultimately, we're always responsible.
So how can you?
There's levels. I think there's levels of what we choose and don't choose. This is what's called like an accidental murder, and the idea of an ori miklat, that I did something. I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to hurt this person, shame them, embarrass them. I didn't mean to. I was in this unhealthy place, this bad zone, this angry zone, this frustrated zone, and you know, they came and they got in my way, and they like they stuck a spoke in my wheels, and I lashed out, and I'm not proud of it, but that's what happened. Right? This is an element of control, an element almost of not control. That's why it says about the accidental murder, which is a representation for all things not holy and good, not purposeful. Ino liyadei, God almost made it happen. He put you in that situation. V'samtilach, but he gives you a place of escape. And that place is called City of Refuge that we talked about in yesterday's parasha. And that idea is what El represents. It's our City of Refuge. And that's where we can retreat into El. We can, so to speak, swear off a lot of the behaviors which were unhealthy and stay focused instead on doing better things. And as such, be able to prepare for a new year and avoid the toxic impact of things that we chose to think, speak, or even worse, to do. So v'chein lehepach, you could be in a good zone. You could be in merkava tmeya beizu. You could become a vehicle, and that's a good question. Is a vehicle in control? Answer is no. A vehicle is never in control. The driver is in control. The vehicle is not in control. You could become a vehicle to a bad zone. And if you become a vehicle to a bad zone, all those bad thoughts, that's coming from this bad zone I'm in now. I don't want to be in that zone, but I ended up in that zone. And now, because I didn't make the right choices, I wasn't strong enough, and I didn't stick to my guns and stay focused, I ended up in the wrong zone, and I became a vehicle, a merkava, spinning out of control, as a vehicle does, being driven by something or somebody else. It's like when somebody gets you angry, and then they control the conversation. And then they're in control. So therefore, don't get angry. It's like when you have this, you know, debate, especially when it's on live television or live radio, and the person gets through to you, and then it's never good. Because then you're reacting, and then you're vicious, and you're frustrated. It doesn't matter what you say. It's how you say it. You need to be in control of the situation. And you need to say, I'm not going to respond to that. I think that's inappropriate. Put them in the defense. But these are difficult things to do. Well, Avodas Hashem is difficult, so. This is even in the thought zone. Because it can put you into bad thoughts. And you become an extension of that. And that's what we mean when we talk about the dark side. So this is about living a conscious life that's focused, a conscious life that's appropriate, that's the way Hashem wants it to be. And when we don't live in our conscious waking hours the way Hashem wants us to be, we're not in a good zone. We become a vehicle for something unhealthy. You don't have any big avedas. You don't have any big sins. You're doing a great job. Really? Now take a look at all the hours of life that Hashem gave you, all your conscious hours, and see how many of those hours were actually purposefully focused. How many of them were actually mindful acts of avedas Hashem, choices you made to do the right thing. And how many of them weren't? And how many of them were choices to go the other way? And not being mindful already is a choice. Not choosing to serve Hashem is a choice. And that's the chesed acher, that's the other side. So that's part of the honest reckoning. And tomorrow, in the next class in Meretz Hashem, we're going to talk about the subconsciousness. How there may be certain elements of our own toxicity, certain negative elements of our own behavior that we're not aware of, and we're not aware of them because they don't even express themselves. Well, if they don't express themselves, we're not aware of them, then how would I be able to make an accounting or reckoning that's going to make a difference to me? The Alter Rebbe will teach us how. He will show us how to plumb the depths of our subconsciousness to find more out about who we really are, to make that appropriate accounting so that we can successfully get out of our EDD blockage, our situation where we're not responding to spiritual stimuli, and instead to start to live as a vibrant, passionate, soulful Yid should.
So it's possible to change the subconscious blockages?
Oh, we'll talk about that soon. Huh? Well, that's our next class. We'll see about the subconscious.